and Roseanne Ariel, taping on November 29, 1990, for the Oral History Project. We're here with Marty Wolfson. Would you state your name again?
Glad to. Marty Wolfson.
Thank you.
Given that you were in the information aspect in the war, how did that affect in terms of when you saw the concentration camps? When you got to those, were you involved in giving out information to GIs or telling people about what you saw? Did you have any, was that any bearing on what you did?
This wasn't an assignment.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened that I had some time that I wanted to see these things with my own eyes, to envision
mm-hmm.
what it was all about that they were saying happened.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see it.
Were the people there in the concentration camps when you got there? Or had they already been
no,
taken out?
No, they had already been taken out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Can you describe the camps, what they looked
oh,
like?
Oh, gee. Not good.
Okay.
I mean, we saw a lot of bodies. That
have not been buried.
Had not been buried yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was something that they would only permit us, a couple of us who went to these camps, to spend time there. I guess they didn't want people to see all the things that were done.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, we didn't spend as much time as I would have liked to.
Did you take pictures?
No, it wouldn't let us.
It wouldn't let you take pictures?
No, no. So this is something that you might say inborn in your mind
mm-hmm.
As a recollection of an experience
mm-hmm.
that you had. And we weren't allowed to record it.
Someone recorded it, but not. Right. We had to have special permission. Right?
Did you meet any of the people that were in the camp at that time?
Later on, I met people who had, in my travels overseas, I met several people who were from concentration camps. And of course, when I came back home, I met some people too, because they were coming over to the United States afterwards as well.
Mm-hmm. But I guess you didn't meet them in the, what were they called, the displaced persons camp?
No, I didn't. But it was a part of life that you experience as a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And the war in Europe, because I went over to France not too long after D-Day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you begin to really see it.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter where you are, it's still not good. I was fortunate insofar that I didn't actually have to be in battle.
Mm-hmm.
I was given the opportunity through my talents to be able to do things in a different way.
Right.
I didn't expect it to happen, but it mm-hmm. but fortunately for myself, it did.
Mm-hmm.
So the experience overseas was something I don't think I'll ever forget. And that gave me a tremendous insight of the vastness of this world and also the different kinds of people that are involved. And as still an only child, I found working with children overseas to be very, very, very enlightening and very satisfying.
And what else did you do? You said you organized this club with the Pittsburgh Club here.
Right. They conversed by mail and by various other means to the children over here.
Mm-hmm. Did you do anything else with children there?
With some of the kids there,
mm-hmm.
yes. In fact, I taught some art.
Mm-hmm.
Even as a young fellow as I was, I taught kids art.
Mm-hmm.
And It was very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very fortunate in that respect to be able to utilize what I had, what was given to me
uh-huh.
as far as my artistic talents were concerned, to share it with other people.
Mm-hmm. When you came back, well, maybe we could pick up from when you returned after you were out, 1946?
Right.
When you met your, when you got married?
Well, I didn't get married until the 50s, but mm-hmm. in 1946, just to give you an idea of an experience, and I think it's recorded somewhere in the material I sent, but in any event, I met Robert St. John, who was a national correspondent, and he had a program on the radio mm-hmm. at that time, and we did a broadcast. And I appeared with him at Carnegie Hall in New York and actually sketched on stage. And he
did you say he was a national correspondent? Or
yes, national war correspondent.
Okay.
And you appeared with him on TV?
Radio.
On radio?
Yes, and in New York.
And what was the purpose?
This was after the war.
So he was interviewing you?
He was interviewing me as far as my experiences that I've related to you mm-hmm. in meeting English people, French people, and the things that I did while I was overseas at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was the first artist to ever appear at and do sketches on the stage of Carnegie Hall in New York.
Now, what kind of sketches did you do?
It's hard to remember that.
Were they portraits, or were they...
Oh, no, no, these were just quick sketches while he was talking, and just helped relate some stories. Mm-hmm. And was very well received, because he wanted the people in the audience, mm-hmm. there was an audience there, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, that he wanted the audience to see what I was capable of doing and what I had done while I was overseas. Because I started this whole idea of sketching with my sketch pad while I was overseas. And so Robert St. John was the first one who gave me the break.
Hmm. Could you describe these sketches? Are they little stories or little cartoon types?
Honestly, I can't recall because I've done so many sketches over the years. And
they tell a story.
Yeah, yeah. Every sketch was significant in that respect. And,
or captures the moment.
Yeah. And
so how did the audience see them? Were they reflected onto a...
Oh, no, no. I stood on a... I had a...
Oh,
you
big
easel.
Okay.
An easel with a sketch pad, mm-hmm. which I still use. And I actually drew in front of them. And they watched while they were sitting in the audience. Now, this gave me my first break from New York to continue with this. And so when I came back home, I started doing these things more often for various organizations and groups and schools. And then I got my first break on television. That was 1951. And it started the first morning show in Pittsburgh on television.
Mm-hmm. What was it called?
Studio Controls.
And what was the purpose, what was the point of the show, the focus?
The point of the show was to be informative, to be entertaining, and I worked with a group of people that all young people were just really getting themselves started, and it was all done live. In fact, we did mimics, mimes, mm-hmm. and I did sketches to music. That's how I developed the art and the music together.
Did the music correlate with the drawings, or was
yeah,
it or mood music? Or
it was all kinds of music, and I would, while the music was being played, mm-hmm. I would draw the sketch of the significance of
the
music.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
And sometimes I would do it with...
is this like what
the story?
Like what Disney does with Fantasia?
Yeah, yeah.
So you were the
one of the first to do that.
One of the very first, yes.
Yeah.
And
he stole your ideas.
And in 1953, I was given my own show every Friday night at 5:30 to 6.
Mm-hmm. And what did you do?
It's called Tip Top Musical Sketchpad.
Huh.
Because I use music and use the art and the sketchpad, and I had children there, and that's what got me involved with the kids.
Was it
more
geared
so.
For children?
Yes.
The show was geared for children?
Well, actually, I geared it for the family.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was nothing on strictly for family viewing, and I tried to incorporate good thoughts, good direction, and through parents and children seeing things together at the same time,
mm-hmm.
not like it is today.
Right, when people watch separate shows.
In fact, in 1953, I was the first in the country to teach a blind child how to draw. And I had her on my show.
Can you explain to me how that happened? I saw that in the blurb, and I have a hard time visualizing how that happened.
I went out to the School for the Blind and talked with them.
Uh-huh.
And what I did was I took some paper and made little dots.
With Braille?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, for example, I taught her how to draw a pumpkin head.
For following the dots.
Following the dots.
Oh, I see.
And this little girl, and I have pictures of her. I think it was in the article. Or, well, I can show it to you.
Mm-hmm.
It actually showed. Well, I don't want to take it.
Yep.
Talk about it later. I can show it to you later. She would actually follow the dots, and I had her on my program the first time, showing the people that it could happen.
Did she know Braille? Did
yeah.
the child know Braille? Is that where you got the idea?
No, it's not so much from Braille as it was from that they had the blind do a lot of feeling with their fingers,
mm-hmm.
with their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, to pull the hand around in a circular motion would give them an idea of something that was round. Or circular.
Mm-hmm.
And when I made a triangle for the eyes and the nose and the mouths of the pumpkin,
mm-hmm.
I would explain it as well as take her fingers and go over it together
mm-hmm.
With me.
And then she could draw.
Yeah.
She could draw.
And it was actually the establishment of something that they started doing at the School for the Blind at that time. And during the entire period of time that I was...
Okay, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes. So they put this into work at the School for the Blind.
Yeah.
And they would start to teach art that way.
Whether they're still doing it or not, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was quite a fitting experience, fulfilling experience.
Mm-hmm. And people received it well watching the show.
Oh, you ought to get to see the letters that I received from people
mm-hmm.
who were so taken with it. And also, something else that I did on my program, and this is something I'm very proud of, because all the years that I've experienced beforehand, as I've pointed out to you before, was also the first one to ever use religion
mm-hmm.
and of any consequence in doing a One God series, is seen through the eyes of children.
Mm-hmm.
And their parents. And I showed what Catholicism was all about, Protestantism, and Judaism.
How did you do that? Did you interview people?
No, I had a record. It was recorded. It was called the One God series. And it was all done with voices coming over the record with children asking questions, giving answers. And it was told through the eyes of kids. And I received all kinds of wonderful letters from priests, rabbis, and ministers of all kinds. So you can see that...
Is that a continuing thing?
No.
Or was it a series?
It was a series, yeah.
And that was on the same show?
It was part of my show.
Part of the show.
Yes. Then I had an art lesson every week.
Oh, I see.
Where I would teach kids how to draw.
Mm-hmm.
Or anybody. I found adults were doing it too.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, I tried to put on a kind of a program that had a lot of audience participation. A lot of audience involvement
mm-hmm.
in what the program consists of, which you don't find today.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate. And I had guests on the show that I received, and I had children on the show. And the whole idea was to try to involve all kinds of kids from all kinds of backgrounds. And those experiences, just like the ones overseas, were just
mm-hmm.
beyond explanation.
How long was the show on?
I was on for 20 years.
Oh, what's 20 years? Why not?
51 to the 60s.
And that was once a week for 20 years?
Well, no. I started out as once a week, and then I had a show on Friday night and Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
I had... originally was on KDKA TV, or it was first of all called Dumont,
mm-hmm.
WDTV TV, before
mm-hmm.
KDKA, then KDKA, then I was on WTAE for 3 years with my safety program.
So what was that?
Called TV, Wilby's, Will Marty's TV Safety Rangers.
Mm-hmm. And what was that all about?
Safety, taking care, being a good safety-minded individual. I worked with the firemen, the policemen. I was the only one in the city that was doing these kind of things.
This is before Mr. Rogers, or before the children's shows
mm-hmm.
that exist now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's doing that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I used art and music and just a form of communication with questions and answers, just like I do now.
Mm-hmm.
To get the audience to participate, to become involved. And again, it's something I don't think I'll ever forget
mm-hmm.
because it did so much good.
I'm a little, just one thing I'm a little confused about.
Yeah.
The one show, the first show that you were talking about.
That was Studio Controls.
Okay, that lasted for how long?
That was, in fact, forget exactly how many years we did that. I think it was 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was doing a morning and evening.
Mm-hmm.
Friday night I was on for a good long time
mm-hmm.
For Tip Top Red.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on again on Saturday morning.
And that was a different show, though.
Oh, a different show.
Right.
Yes.
And that was called what?
TV Safety Rangers.
TV Safety Rangers. Okay.
My Friday night show was called Musical Tip Top Musical Sketchpad. Again, it was all involving art and music.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd tell stories. Like I'd have stories unrecorded,
uh-huh.
That were recorded, and folk tales.
And you'd be sketching them?
I'd be sketching them
as
like a comic strip.
And you'd be relaying the story like
yeah.
a storyteller?
No, because the story was being told on record.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
it was
I
recorded.
See. Uh-huh. Right.
You see? You don't see how many records I have.
You have a library.
But
very
nobody else was doing it.
The programming at that time, I mean, Rogers Neighborhood, that started that time, but
yeah.
it seems to me like you were in the forefront of all of it and combined.
Well, we started
all things that have been
slightly before Mr. Rogers. And it wasn't too much ahead of him, but as I say, we were on the first morning show in Pittsburgh. And WQED wasn't on at that time. This was called Dumont, as I pointed out before, and that was WDTV. And we were the first morning show that went on the air.
You are a real TV personality, it sounds
well,
like. How did it, in terms of your daily lifestyle, in terms of your personal life, how did that affect you at all?
Well, I was married in 1950s.
This is after your shows had started already. your wife's name?
Irene.
And what was her maiden name?
Glick. G-L-I-C-K.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter, named Paula, is a war, is a correspondent at the White House now. She also worked on television in Pittsburgh.
When was she born? What's her birthday?
We guys, I always have to remember these. And
well,
I have them all marked down.
She's a correspondent now?
She was born January 26, 1952.
Uh-huh.
My daughter Marla was born April 1954.
Mm-hmm.
And my son Todd was born December 1955.
Contemporaries. How did you meet your wife?
She used to work for Warner Brothers Theater. When I say Warner Brothers Theater, you know, the movies?
Mm-hmm.
She was a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be doing some work with them, and I met her. And we got together, and things happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very proud of my kids because my son is a chef, and he's got two children of his own.
Well, where does he live?
He lives now in Reston, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
He's at the Hyatt Regency. And
has two children, you said?
Two children, two boys.
What are their names?
Daniel and Graham.
Graham?
Graham. And my daughter Marlo lives with us, and she has a son, Joshua.
Mm-hmm. How old is he?
Joshua is 8.
And what does she do? Is she?
She works for a medical brace company.
And I'm sorry, you said Paula?
Paula is a correspondent for the Voice of America at the White House. She's traveling all over with President Bush.
Is she married? Is she
married? No, she's not married.
Mm-hmm. Pretty busy lady.
Yeah. Very.
Yeah.
What was her what did she study? Journalism?
Yes. She was in communications too. I'm very grateful in the fact that I was able to expose my kids through my own work to the arts. My son would play Tevye, his Fiddler on the Roof.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quite an actor. I thought he was going to go into acting.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere along the line he went into chefing. And but they're all talented in that respect of
creative.
Being creative, either in writing. Paul is a beautiful writer. She's a very sensitive person. In fact, she's one of the very few at the Voice of America that they call upon to do a story when they want it sensitive, in a very sensitive manner.
Mm-hmm.
And she broadcasts all over. So, somewhere along the line, I guess, things rub off.
Mm-hmm.
And My daughter, my wife, is very talented in the sense of making embroidery,
mm-hmm.
things of that nature. She does it beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Handwork?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What made you come back to Pittsburgh after you were in the service? You traveled a lot, you've been all over?
Yeah. I came back because of my parents living here, and of course I came back. I wasn't married at the time, and this was my home.
Mm-hmm.
I always loved Pittsburgh, and always had ties here, and therefore I always wanted to make sure that I was able to do something worthwhile.
How would you compare here, living in Pittsburgh, compared to where we're culturally, and it's been very different to living abroad?
Well, I've had such a such a broad experience in my experiences overseas. It's great. Everything that I've learned and everything that I've seen and everything that I gained from that, I can never falter in whatsoever. But when I came back here and I started with television and then started doing books. And my first book was mostly about Pittsburgh. That was done with a former school teacher of mine.
Joseph Carrigan.
No, not Joseph, not that one. That was the second one. But that was done in 1951, mostly about Pittsburgh.
Your first book?
My first one.
Now you published that?
Yep. I actually put it together, published it, produced it. It was my first attempt in doing a book about Pittsburgh. I loved Pittsburgh. And that was seen through the eyes of three children at the time. And they were the children of my former school teacher. And he wanted me to do something with him. And then from that came Pittsburgh, We Live Here, We Like It. I did with Josie Carey. And that went all over the world and received all kinds of awards. And it was all art.
Mm-hmm.
It was a look at Pittsburgh up to the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things happened, some of them didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I developed the John Mazurak, who was the technical individual beside Joe Mazurak. Remember Joe Mazurak?
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to be the steel worker's dream.
Yeah.
Well, I developed a John Mazurak, who was the technical and studious and the new things that were going to be happening. And from that came all the other books. I've done over 150 some books about people, about hospitals, about religion. Can you imagine? I was the first Jew to do a book with a Catholic priest called Michael O'Connor, the first Catholic bishop of Pittsburgh. And I did a 500 and some page book on the history of the Felician Sisters of Coriopolis.
You did the research and...
No, they did the research.
You put it together.
I did
you
the coordination, it. Put it together.
Right.
And I've done several books on people's families and lives. And
do you have a special interest in the type of books that you like to work with?
Yes. Good, positive books that have a good, positive framework where people can learn from it. For example, that one book up there, Pittsburgh, the Story of the City of Champions, was the greatest 10-year history of any city in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We won more championships.
Hmm.
Even to the marbles champions.
And my son would love that book.
And the other book up there, History of Sports of Pittsburgh, enabled me to put in the museum at Three River Stadium. And we did a wax figure of Roberto Clemente,
mm-hmm.
which is now in the Hall of Fame at Cooperstown. It's the only one. And I have his uniform, gave me his uniform. There's a picture of him right here. You can see.
Mm-hmm.
At the last day of the last game paper played at Forbes Field. So you see, there's been things that have been done way back when on the Hill, and things that have been done as recently.
So you were doing the publishing while you were doing the TV shows. It was all done simultaneously during all of it.
Most of my publishing was done after my days on television.
Mm-hmm.
That book was done in 1963, and that was done in 69, and then in 80.
First book was 63?
No. First book was 51.
Okay,
yeah.
You mean the sports books?
No, mostly about Pittsburgh.
Okay. Second book
was done in 63.
What made you decide to leave TV?
TV was changing. And not that I wanted to leave TV. They were just changing. It was taking on a whole new twist
mm-hmm.
of kind of programs that they wanted to put on. I did make appearances from here, you know, here and there, but nothing on a regular basis. It wasn't live anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The national shows.
Yeah. And so therefore, I like performing live in front of my audience. I like things to happen right then and there. And, well, today television is altogether different than it was 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. Altogether different. But doing books has always been probably the greatest thing I've ever attempted to do, because those are the things that live the longest.
Mm-hmm.
That one book up there on Oakmont, which is a 100-year history of the borough of Oakmont, just received an award for the most outstanding book, a case-bound book on a community.
You know, one thing I'm noticing is you didn't go to college. Did you do any?
Yes, I went to Carnegie Tech.
For 1 year?
For 1 year.
Uh-huh.
And
did
I did
you finish?
No, never went back.